Jeff, Jeff, Jeff. Jeff, 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 Jeff. J-E-F-F, Jeff. J-E-F-F, Jeff. J-E-F-F, Jeff, Jeff, Jeff. Jeff, Jeff, Jeff. J-E-F-F, Jeff, Jeff, Jeff.
Oh, I'm supposed to be talking now. I was wondering why the song was longer. Hey, Jeff, it's me, Todd Mickelson, sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. Thanks for calling in. This is Jeff Stein from 1540 KXEL News Talk. He's in the studio down in Iowa. What are your shows again, Jeff? Remind me.
Todd, always good to talk with you. Well, in addition to the work I do at KXEL, which is a three-hour program every morning, I also have my own syndicated programs across the state, the Iowa Almanac and the Iowa Business Report.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah, and we got a camera weird angle going on. So if I'm looking at you, I'm looks like I'm looking down, but I'm looking at you. So say, what do you think about, I wanted to get your take because you're kind of more of a legalese guy. A couple of things. One of the major things that happened today is this letter that Jack, what's his name, the special prosecutor,
Smith,
wrote to the judge down in Florida. I was going to ask you, do you know the word mandamus?
Yeah.
Okay, because I didn't.
It's a fancy legal phrase, and we don't like, you know, those of us who are lawyers don't like to spread Latin around too much, Todd, because right. It makes us seem just arrogant and, you know, I mean, basically it's a do what you're supposed to do order, but that doesn't have the panache as a writ of mandamus. It's just basically saying do what you're supposed to do. You know, and so if you have a legal obligation to do something, you should do it. That's what a writ of mandamus is.
Yeah. You actually did know what it meant. I was going out on a limb to putting you on the spot.
Three long years, my friend, plus a bar examination. I know what it means.
Yeah, well, apparently Jack Smith is pretty angry at the judge now because he said he used that word and said that he's just about ready to mandamus on her to the 11th Circuit.
I don't know that that's legal a lot of places, maybe between consenting adults. But, well, his concern is that he does not believe the judge is ruling on pending matters in a timely fashion.
Right.
In order to allow the calendar that he would like to see play out. The thing that folks have to remember, and this has nothing to do with the former president, it has nothing to do with the charges. Stuff in courts takes a long time. There are all manner of delays. And the fact that things are not moving as swiftly as some on one side would like, that does not necessarily mean that there's a corrupt judge or that people aren't doing their jobs or that one side is trying to play the stall game.
Right.
The fact of the matter is this stuff all takes a great deal of time normally, because much as we might like to have things resolved immediately, there are dozens of cases, Todd, on the docket that would like to have their stuff resolved quickly as well. I think part of the backlash I should mention is that a lot of the folks who would like to see the full court press on Trump from a legal standpoint, they're realizing that this should have started a year sooner than it did.
Yeah.
Because if, you know, you could have asked any lawyer about the time it takes for cases to move through the system, and there just was no way that all of these things were going to be up at the same time and crippling the 2024 campaign for the Republican presumptive nominee.
Well, the one thing that kind of set him off, she was making all of these moves, and she was doing it in a way that was not really entered in a way that he could retaliate against. So she was kind of covering her tush I'm talking mm-hmm. about Judge Cannon in Florida. But what she mm-hmm. did yesterday, I believe it was she said, okay, I want each side to instruct the jurors. And apparently it's really early for that because there is no jury and there's not even really a solid date for the trial. And mm-hmm. she said she wants the jurors to be instructed about the presidential, the stupid thing Trump always says about the, I'm having troubles with names. Cause
election interference?
It came under the Nixon administration, the Presidential Records Act.
And, oh, sure.
Yeah. And, but the Trump side, and it seems like Judge Cannon totally misunderstands the Presidential Records Act. And so she's saying we need to instruct the jury that it's up to the president to decide what documents are his personal documents. And Jack Smith is making the argument that, no, you can't like take a top secret war plan and decide that it's your personal thing and then take it home with you. So that's the trigger here that's going on. That's making him finally say, you know, you need to make a ruling on this so that it's an official ruling so that I can do what I need to do with it, which I think is now I need to appeal it before the trial because mm-hmm. she's trying to get everything going and put into jeopardy era so that he can't be retried if the whole thing blows up. So Jack Smith is trying to appeal it before that period. And
well,
he's...
I was with you until that last part about mm-hmm. the double jeopardy, because again, he's waived speedy trial. Now he could reinvoke that at any point, just like any defendant could. Okay. Here's the thing. And there's a lot in what you said, because it's a very complicated issue that kind of needs to be unpacked. First of all, in a complicated case, civil or criminal, it is not uncommon for a judge to say, let's get the instructions agreed upon even before we seat the jury. Mm-hmm. Now, here's why. Jury instructions. This is what the judge gives to the jury in terms of saying this is what the law is. Mm-hmm. So here's the crime that's alleged. Here are the elements. Here are definitions. Often it's a very thick packet. The judge makes that determination. And usually what happens is the testimony comes in. The judge has the instructions. The lawyers propose different ones, etc. The lawyers don't have to agree. It's the judge who decides of what the instructions are. And judges often, in order to avoid an appealable issue, they're pretty lenient or broad about theories of the case.
So they're trying to give Trump what he wants, sort of. Maybe even too much or something.
Well, it's a matter of, if Trump is going to rely on the Presidential Records Act, you've got to tell the jury what the Presidential Records Act is. Now, the fighting issue might be between the prosecution and the defense how to interpret that.
Right.
That indeed then is the appealable issue.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like they're talking about.
And that's exactly. So, and here's the other thing. If you agree on the instructions ahead of time, or I shouldn't say agree upon them, if they are determined ahead of time, you then know what the ultimate direction the jury is going to be headed is. In other words, this is what we're going to tell the jury. And so the evidence that comes out plays toward that. I mean, let's say, and because he's not here to defend himself, he's a great foil for this. Let's say Matt McNeil is charged with burglary. Okay, whatever. He forgot his headphones, broke into the studio, and he got arrested for burglary. I, as a lawyer, know what the standards are for burglary in the state. I know what the normal jury instruction is. I know what I have to worry about the other side proving. And similarly, the prosecutor would know what the elements of the offense are. Not a case where there may be a few things that are up for grabs. Well, sure, that's a much smoother case.
I see. Okay.
But to your point, if the judge says we're going to do jury instructions ahead of time, and then he's saying, oh, well, that's going to take 3 weeks. And then we're going to have hearings and fights, et cetera. He's seeing his window, Todd, slip away.
Yeah.
And if he wants the case wrapped up before November, then that's what he's talking about. It's like, but it's a gutsy move because you know, I don't know about your experience with the legal system, but I think you probably would not go out of your way to antagonize a judge.
I know. Yeah, definitely.
If you're the prosecutor in this case and you're saying, judge, if you don't hurry up, I'm going to go tell mom and dad on you, because that's what a writ of mandamus is in this situation.
Yeah.
Ooh, you know, I mean, I'm not saying he's wrong about it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it takes a little pedigree to do that, shall we say.
Yeah, it sounds like I've seen a lot of professional analysis, you know, a lot of legal people talking about that it really seems like she is definitely inexperienced. She has no experience doing what she's doing. And they're saying that she just kind of, in a lot of ways, doesn't look like she really knows what she's doing. And oftentimes the reactions from Jack Smith almost seems like he's trying to give her a clue, like, hey, that's not really how you write this. What you need to do is this, you know, because she does so many things wrong to begin with.
Yeah, but once again, if you don't want to be the smartest kid in class correcting the teacher all the time in front of God and everybody, because that doesn't go well. Now, there are other checks on this, and I will just darn near guarantee you, behind the scenes, the chief judge or the judge who assigned the case is not only paying attention, but reviewing things.
Right.
There is no way you take someone and just cast them out to sea without checking in.
And also the 11th Circuit, I'm sure, is watching everything closely.
Of course. Yeah. How can you not? And,
right.
And again, you know, what judge, even with the most lengthy of experience, has handled a case like this? You know, I mean, again,
right, yeah.
Everything that's being done is precedent setting. And I am sure there's a chief judge watching. I am sure this judge is noodling, you know, with others at the courthouse. But again, the prosecutor wants to appear strong, like any prosecutor would. I'm not casting aspersions on this one in particular. I'm just saying they want to appear strong, and they know how pivotal a correct interpretation of the Presidential Records Act is to the whole case. And yeah, the sooner you get these fundamental points, another very quick example. Let's say that I'm defending Matt McNeil on a charge of receiving contraband. And there is a suppression hearing. In other words, I say that the police came and took the stuff and they didn't have the right warrant. And therefore, if the police acted inappropriately, they cannot use the evidence against Matt McNeil.
Right.
Well, let's say I lose. You're the judge and you say, forget it. We're using all that evidence because that McNeil guy's, you know, a scurrilous character. I'm going to appeal the suppression decision. And they will very likely say no trial until that's determined on appeal, even if it takes 3 years. Because what's the point of wasting time going to a trial and then later being told, well, you shouldn't have used that evidence? So it is not uncommon in a criminal case that if either side gets an adverse ruling, they appeal and it freezes the time of the trial. And you like it when I talk about McNeil in criminal trouble. I can just tell.
We all got to make fun of Matt when he's not here. You know, I would be willing to do it when he is here, but you know,
I was going
to
say, I don't limit it.
Right.
And you know, I think Patrick and Brett would confirm. I don't limit it to when he's not here. It's somehow just a little more fun even when he's not.
So you then, as the defense attorney, you would be very careful on how you treat the judge. Would you advise Matt McNeil to ridicule the judge and maybe accuse his assistant of being the girlfriend of the Senate leader and things like, would that be a smart thing for Matt McNeil to do in any of those circumstances?
No, of course not. But Matt McNeil in that situation is not playing to the court and not playing to the jury. Matt McNeil is playing
to his listeners.
His
listeners.
Yeah, he's playing to his
listeners. AM 950 listeners.
he's playing to the listeners in Chicago and the Twin Cities and hoping that more people will buy calendars.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing.
Right, exactly. Very,
and again,
very good analogy.
Not, if you're the lawyer, you know, you want to get paid in advance because this isn't going to go well.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes, exactly. Say, we got to take a short break. We'll be right back with more of Jeff Stein talking about crazy stuff on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett on the drums there. And we've got Jeff. Oh, my, somebody's calling my cell. That, don't my friends listen to the radio? I don't know who that is. Anyway.
It's McNeil.
Yeah.
He's calling, and he's trying to take control of the show.
Yeah, he was listening to us, and now he's mad.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So we're here.
Our job is done.
Yes.
Our work is
complete.
Yeah,
we can sign off. So we're talking with Jeff Stein. He's here to clarify some complicated things. That last segment helped me understand the complicated thing going on in the Florida case. And so what do you think? I thought it was pretty interesting in Florida that the state Supreme Court, it seems like they did the right, they were fair on both of these things. They ruled that the governor passing a bill about making abortion illegal after 6 weeks, they said that can go through. But then they also, in the same session, decided that it was fair for it to be put on the ballot in November, that the Floridian voters can vote to basically codify Roe v. Wade. They seem like contradictory things, and they are. But that's why I thought it was kind of surprising, because usually we're hearing that these Supreme Courts are kind of biased. It sounds like, I don't know, do you agree that it sounds like this Supreme Court actually kind of was fair in both instances?
Well, they're fair because the legal argument is not the same as an outcome-driven argument.
Right.
You are correct that to allow both of those things would seem inconsistent if you're focused on the outcome. But if you're focused on the mechanics of government,
mm-hmm.
well, the state has the right to pass a law, the governor has the right to sign it, and the citizens, under their referendum laws, not all states have those, have the right to have a referendum to codify certain procedures, codify or put in the Constitution, separate issue, have a constitutional amendment on it. So it's the way it was supposed to be. It's the way, Todd, that I learned it in law school, which is justice is blind. As in, we don't care about left or right. We don't care about the impact on society, actually. We care about what is legal in a given situation.
So you agree they did what they're supposed to do.
Absolutely.
We don't expect that anymore from Supreme Courts, you know.
This is what's really sad. Is that, and this is why in many states, judges are elected, popularly elected. And that is the same when you get to the appellate level. I live in a state that uses the Missouri plan, which, you know, so something good came out of Missouri. Anyway, it's a matter that we do not elect judges. Now, we have retention elections. So, you know, there's a whole process to appoint a judge or a justice.
Mm-hmm.
And every however many number of years, the people have the right to vote them out, but there's no campaigning. You don't see, you know, Democrat for judge.
Right.
And I know, you know, I have friends in the legal community. Well, I don't have friends, but I know people in the legal community in Texas. And they felt compelled to go to every stupid fundraiser so that they're seen in front of the judge, because that way it's like the judge will remember they donated money. I mean, that's no way to run a system either.
Right. Yeah. I believe Minnesota has similar to what you described in Iowa and Missouri.
It's very popular. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems right. I actually worked on a campaign for somebody who's on the Minnesota Supreme Court, and I did a fundraiser, but it was on Zoom because it was during the pandemic, you know, I had to be very careful to not talk about like his opponent while he was on, you know, we did half of it and then he left and the rest of us stuck around and, you know, talked about, okay, the person he's running against is crazy. So we got to make sure he wins and blah, blah, blah. So, but
then the good stuff came, right?
Yeah.
The judge is gone. Everybody clear. The judge is gone. Okay. Here. Right. Let's get to it.
Yeah. And the sad thing is that he would have had a blast if he could have been a part of it. But
of course,
knowing him the way
of course,
I do.
But, you know, my late father was a judicial magistrate, and that was, again, an appointment. That was not to the level of election or anything. There was an appointment and a renewal process and whatever. But the bottom line was he could not participate in partisan politics.
Right.
That was the rules of judicial ethics. And it turned out to be terribly convenient because, I have to keep my hands clean on this. It didn't matter what his party affiliation was, but had to stay just very neutral.
Yeah. Yeah. So you kind of hire your guys behind the scene to do the dirty work. And I had the pleasure of being one of those
hire,
guys.
Hire is such a strong term.
Todd. Yeah. I didn't get paid, I guess. So I wasn't really hired.
Enlist?
Right. So talking about politics then, in Florida, I started to say maybe 6 or 8 weeks ago, but a lot because of the citizens getting all these signatures. Now, apparently, it's exceeded 1 million signatures, 200,000 of which are Republicans who wanted this on the ballot. And so I was saying, wow, there are sane people in Florida. Who knew? And I was saying, is it possible? Because I think Trump only won in 2020, Florida by like 4 points or something. And
I'm gonna pop the balloon here.
Yeah.
And dissuade you of the thought that there are sane people. Because
a lot of people will
this.
Vote for that referendum and still vote for Trump.
Well, how about people? Let's say you have a bunch of Republicans who say, put it on the ballot because we want to limit abortion. And if it's on the ballot, more of our people will show up and that will work to elect more Republicans.
Right.
See, I could turn that around from an activist standpoint and say,
absolutely.
Sure, put it on the ballot because both sides are going to use it. To raise tons of money like they did for the half century that Roe was in place.
That's a very good point, and I have heard that as well. It could be used as kind of a weapon from both sides. Mm-hmm. So who knows? But it's funny how people are even talking about, at least people are talking about that Republicans will have to do that and they will have to spend money, and they don't really have money. So if they're going to use that as a tool, they're going to have to put some effort into that. So thanks so much, Jeff,
it was great
for
fun,
being
Todd.
With us.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah, really good to talk to you, too. Thanks so much for being a part of the show. We're going to say goodbye to Chicago, but if you're in the Twin Cities, come back in a few minutes on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.